Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Highland Dragon's Lady by Isabel Cooper. Narrated by Derek Perkins. 1. July 1895. Someone was climbing up to Colin McAllister's room. The plum tree below the balcony where he stood was moving, first lower branches shaking, then higher ones. The night was windless, and neither a bird nor a squirrel would cause quite that much disturbance. Not even the stable cats of Whitehill Abbey, overfed as they were, could manage it. So, then, a human being, and probably a live one, despite the Abbey's reputation for ghosts. Ghosts generally didn't bother climbing trees, in Colin's limited experience. He didn't think Whitehill housed any mortals who wanted him dead. When the eldest son of the house asked a chap to pay a visit, the locals weren't generally disposed toward assassination, at least outside of novels. Edmund Talbot Jones and his parents seemed harmless enough, and the other house guests would be more likely to drive a man to suicide than kill him outright, although Colin thought Mrs. Osborne wouldn't be above a discreet bit of arsenic in the teacup if she thought the situation required it. Of course, he could be wrong. The leaves were rustling just above the edge of the balcony now. Colin stepped back into the shadows and waited. One way or another, he suspected he'd be enjoying himself immensely over the next few minutes. The intruder shimmied off a branch, grabbed the edge of the balcony, and swung herself up to sit on the railing. Herself was the definitive pronoun. The girl in question was wearing a man's shirt and a pair of trousers, but both were rather small even for the average stable boy, and she wasn't. Athletic and limber, yes. Boyish? Definitely not. This evening was definitely looking more interesting. Nonchalantly, with the air of having regularly occupied exactly such a seat, Colin's visitor slid forward on the railing, twined her legs around the marble bars below her, and made herself comfortable. In the darkness, from Colin's distance, a mortal man would have seen only her figure and the braid of dark hair trailing behind her. Not being mortal, Colin saw that her face was long and delicate-looking, with big brown eyes and a turned-up nose with a spray of freckles across it. That was as far as observation took him before the girl started to speak. "You really are a prize idiot. You know that." Other people, most notably Colin's siblings, had made similar observations, but they hadn't prepared him to receive such comments with perfect equanimity, particularly coming from the small mouth of a girl he'd never met in his life. Words didn't precisely fail him. He could think of quite a few. But the process of choice stumped him just then, and created a receptive silence, which the girl clearly read as a request for more on the same theme. "If you don't like a girl, you poor dumb fish," she went on. "The thing to do is to avoid her, and possibly to talk about other women whenever you can. You do not have long, vague conversations with her in gardens at twilight, and you certainly don't jump into lakes after her hat. And you needn't tell me that you do like her, because this is me talking to you, and I know perfectly well that you don't. It doesn't seem likely that anyone could." Hat? Lake? Gardens? Colin would have admitted, under very little pressure, to have walked in any number of gardens with any number of women. He couldn't precisely swear that, over the course of 300 years, he'd never rescued a hat from a watery grave. None of the above, however, had happened over the course of his time at Whitehill. He cleared his throat. "Which brings me to point two," said the girl, sensing that the moment was right to press forward like the proverbial wolf on the fold, "which is that if you think you're going to marry her, I'll throw you into the lake myself. There are plenty of perfectly nice girls in England who'd be glad to marry anybody. Even if you've given in to Pater at last, you've got no need to choose some—" She waved one white-clad arm in a vigorous manner, causing Colin to shift his weight forward in case she fell from the railing. What's a mad scientist's cross between a toffee pudding and a Salvation Army captain? Ah. The girl slid down from the railing. Her tone softened. Having gotten the initial message across, she clearly felt that she could now show some mercy. "Don't fret," she said. "I'll get you out of it this time, and I'll have a word with Pater about the sort he keeps pushing on you. But do be careful, won't you? Leave the Heselton filly to that dancing master-looking Scottish chap you brought down. He knows how to handle a girl, if you believe Bettina. And Lily, and my dear lady," said Colin, stepping forward and bowing before she could continue the list. Housemaids were clearly creatures of little discretion and a great deal of trouble. "I'm afraid you've been labouring under a case of mistaken identity." At this point, the situation could have gone a number of ways. The girl might have screamed. She might have fainted, although your modern girl, in Colin's experience, was rather beyond fainting, particularly the specimen of modern girl who climbed up to balconies in the dead of night. She might have thrown a small but tasteful potted geranium at Colin's head, or she might have slapped him. Instead, she laughed. Respecting the hour, she laughed quietly, but she didn't otherwise bother to restrain herself. She leaned against the railing, tilted her head back, and broke into a cascade of giggles that made her shoulders shake and let Colin see that her breasts were clearly unbound beneath her shirt. The night air, even in July, had a certain chill, but heat welled up between his legs nonetheless. He adjusted his dressing gown to provide a little more discretion. "Well, I'll be damned," she said eventually. "You're the dancing master-looking Scottish chap. Colin McAllister, at your service." "Reggie Talbot Jones. Regina, Miss Talbot Jones." She made a face. "Doesn't seem like I can stand on propriety, though, considering the circumstances. And I've known plenty of dancing masters in my life, all of them very handsome and, respectable." "Good Lord, I hope not." Reggie giggled again. "You really ought to have let me know sooner," she said. "Oh, aye, probably. But you didn't really give me much chance to think, you know." "Poor Edmund." "Poor Edmund, my foot. You don't know half the trouble he'd have gotten into if I wasn't his sister. And why are you in his room, anyhow?" "Ultimately, because Mr. Heselton broke his ankle," Colin said, and remembered that Reggie was a daughter of White Hill. "Have any of the steps on the front stairway ever broken before?" "Not since we've been here," said Reggie. "But that'll only be 2 years at Candlemas." She lifted her eyebrows. "If you're asking whether I think the ghost could be responsible, the answer is yes. But you knew it would be. You're here because of the ghost, aren't you?" "I'm here because your brother invited me. And because I was curious," Colin admitted. Mr. Talbot Jones had not invited public scrutiny of his house's less material inhabitants. His guest list, though comprised of a number of people versed in the occult, included nobody as well known as Blavatsky had been, or Besant still was. And he was clearly trying his hardest to seem as if he'd simply decided to host the indefinite houseguests that any wealthy man might welcome in summer. They'd all played croquet the day before, and there'd been sundry talk of shooting and boating among those assembled. Edmund had put the invitation in almost those terms. "It'll be a lark," he'd said, "even if they don't manifest more than a bit of gauze. And I could use a bit of friendly company." "You do seem like a curious sort of man," said Reggie, giving him a once-over. "Since Edmund invited you and not Pater, does that mean you've no idea what to do with a ghost?" "Depends on the ghost, I should think." "Ha!" said Reggie, her suspicions clearly confirmed. "Well, if you're just up to gawk, at least you won't be drifting around being mystic at everyone. We had a girl in over the winter who kept lecturing me on the spiritual properties of my food. I think I lost 2 stone before I fled back to London. I'd imagine you'd find that helpful, considering your hobbies. Colin gestured toward the tree. 1. Climbing trees isn't a hobby. 2. I wasn't that heavy to start with. So chivalrous of you to mention that, by the way. And 3. That plum is very sturdy.
Not as sturdy as the floor, I think. Do you always take the arboreal route?
It's easier than sneaking through the house, said Reggie, shrugging. Even when I was a child and we didn't have ghosts, we had vases, and ornamental tables, and hat stands. Do you know how much damage the average hat stand can do to a growing girl?
Colin laughed. I can't say I've ever made a study.
But why sneak at all? When I was young, because of...
She waved a hand.
Nannies and governesses and housemistresses and things. They disapprove of night-time excursions. I can't imagine why. I've always found them awfully broadening to the mind.
That's probably why, said Colin.
And now I don't want to wake the place. The maids talk, and then Mater frets, and if I want to air certain frank views about certain house-guests, it's dashed hard to find a time to do so during the day, especially with those house-guests languishing around the place all the time, pouting soulfully.
The air of scorn about Reggie was too thick, in fact, to cut with the proverbial knife. A cookery might have done the job, or a machete. Out of a mingled sense of helpfulness and devilment, Colin pointed out,
"Such sisterly honesty isn't likely to do very much in the way of changing Edmund's mind, you know. Not if he's in love with the girl."
He knew that much from experience. Over the last few 100 years, he, Stephen, and Judith had all waxed fairly frank with each other on the subject of romantic connections, and all 3 had failed to make much impression. Though Colin did give himself credit for pushing along his brother's romance with the woman who was now his wife.
"He's not," said Reggie.
"Are you certain? Miss Heselton isn't to everyone's tastes when it comes to personality, but there are men who like that sort of thing, and she's certainly up to the mark physically, if you'll forgive my bluntness."
"I will," said Reggie.
Perhaps feeling once again that a woman who vaulted onto balconies in the dead of night couldn't stick strictly to the approved rules of conversation.
"But Edmund doesn't care about that, and he doesn't want to marry her."
She spoke quickly and clearly impulsively, but there was no idealism in her voice, no suggestion that she was a high-minded young woman who expected her brother to care only for the heart and soul, or other such sentimental rubbish. No. Reggie spoke as one who knew facts that she wasn't telling.
"He must confide in you a great deal," said Colin meaningfully. "He does," said Reggie, with a sudden look of realization and alarm. "And I shouldn't be discussing him with a stranger. A pleasure to meet you, I'm sure, but..."
She turned toward the balcony.
"No, wait a bit," Colin said.
Reggie was the best bit of entertainment he'd had all day, and he hated to lose her to a sudden attack of scruples. When she didn't turn at his voice, he darted forward and caught her by the wrist. She did turn then, her eyes wide with fear, but it didn't matter. At the touch of skin on skin, Colin felt a presence in his mind, a brush of warm contact that came, in the strange way that mental contact sometimes worked, with the smell of oranges. He thought of flying on a summer's day, wings open to the updrafts, in southern climes where he hadn't been for decades. Then he heard Reggie's shocked voice.
"You're a dragon."
2. Reggie knew she shouldn't have said it, not aloud. Since the age of 13, when her strange power had started expressing itself, she'd begun to learn the art of a closed mouth and a good poker face, as hard as both were for her. At 18, after an evening that still hurt to remember, she'd doubled her efforts. Now she considered herself very good when she wanted to be. Most people didn't grab her. Most people wore gloves, and so, most of the time, did Reggie. Society made her situation a little easier that way. And most people didn't remember flying on great leathery wings or the glint of sunlight off midnight blue scales. Under the circumstances, Reggie really couldn't kick herself too hard for anything she blurted out. She did wish she hadn't said it when Colin's hand was around her wrist, though. He was a dragon. He was also tall as a man, and despite his slim body, he'd caught her with considerable strength. And from what Reggie could make out in the moonlight, he was staring at her like he'd been pole-axed. People could get damned angry when one found out their secrets. Colin's secret was more shattering than most. Taking advantage of his distraction, Reggie yanked her wrist away and stepped backward, trying not to stumble. Dignity. That was the ticket. Her backside hit the balcony railing and she yelped. Dignity. Right-ho. And what on earth? Colin asked, tilting his head to the side and staring at her. Are you? He hadn't pulled the sinisterly curved knife that books said was generally inevitable in these situations. He hadn't tried to throttle her, which was an acceptable alternative from the perspective of your average faceless fiend or axe-wielding maniac. And he didn't sound angry. Speculative might end up being just as bad in the end, but Reggie could at least play for time. Just a girl, she said, as far as I've ever been able to tell. A girl who can read minds, said Colin, from a family whose house is haunted. We only moved in 2 years ago. They're not our ghosts, said Reggie, for all the good that correcting him was likely to do her. And I can't exactly read minds, and I won't tell anyone, I promise. Colin chuckled. Of course you won't. Who'd believe you? You can put your mind at ease, he added, with a graceful wave of one hand. I've no ill intentions toward you. I'm only curious. You mentioned that, said Reggie. Now that she could breathe normally again, and the balcony felt more solid underneath her feet, she had to fight the urge to be surly. Her temper had been the subject of several tedious governess lectures when she was growing up. In this instance, she couldn't help feeling some justification for it. While she was trying to adjust her view of the world, Colin was standing there, his hands in his smoking jacket, looking down at her without any apparent care. It was quite possible that the next word out of his mouth was going to be fascinating. And it was quite possible that Reggie would push him off the balcony if it was. To add insult to injury, he was also handsome. Tall and slim, with high cheekbones and a pointed chin, large silver-grey eyes, and thick, dark hair that blew picturesquely in the faint breeze. Reggie didn't doubt that he knew it. She threw back her shoulders, raised her head, and asked, "Do I get to be curious, too? It's not as if you're an ordinary sort of fellow." "Oh," said Colin, his voice dropping and taking on a caressing tone. "I'd be glad to gratify any curiosity you're having, I'm sure." Years had passed since Reggie had left the schoolroom, and she'd run with a bohemian crowd in the meantime. She'd heard her share of suggestive comments. Most of the time, she didn't even blush. When warmth spread across her face as Colin spoke, it was due to the uncomfortable knowledge that other parts of her body were responding as well. She crossed her arms over her chest and cursed the thin fabric of her shirt. "I should have expected that," she said, trying to sound world-weary. She really should have, too, except, well, he was a friend of Edmund's, and many of them weren't very interested in women. Reggie, of course, wasn't supposed to know about such things. But there were many things she wasn't supposed to know about, and yet there was very little of the world with which she wasn't familiar by now. So she'd thought, anyhow. She was revising that opinion at full speed.
"I didn't even know your sort enjoyed young women," she said, by way of firing a further shot across his bow. "At least not in any way but dinner."
"Myth and fable, I assure you," said Colin. He shrugged. "Oh, there's a villain in every family if you look hard enough. A great-great-great-uncle might have breakfasted on the occasional peasant, and I believe an ancestor on my grandfather's side swallowed up most of a Russian regiment, but that was the spoils of war. I wouldn't dream of eating anything with a mind. Besides, it's hard enough to get a cook who won't spoil beef."
"That's a weight off my mind," said Reggie, laughing despite herself.
"Glad to oblige. And speaking of minds, what exactly do you do if you don't read them?"
"I get impressions, thoughts, memories sometimes. I don't do it on purpose, and I can't control it very well. It's more like being shouted at than reading."
"Sounds unpleasant," Colin said, with a refreshingly matter-of-fact sympathy. "Do either of your parents have the same power? I'm sure I'd have noticed by now if Edmund had."
"Are you?" Reggie asked,
but she didn't wait for an answer. Gentlemen did take off their gloves to shake hands. She didn't want to think there was anything more involved, not when Colin had been flirting with her a minute ago.
"But no, he doesn't. Neither does anyone living in the family, as far as I've ever been able to tell. Mater's grandfather was supposed to have been odd, but she wouldn't ever give me details, and Uncle Lewis went a sort of puce colour when I asked him."
"That's a bad habit. Doubtless highly destructive to all sorts of circulatory systems and limbic what-not. You shouldn't encourage him in it."
"I try not to encourage that side of the family in anything much. They're the sort that need sitting at regular intervals. But it was when I first started to read people," she said, "and I was, well, curious. What about you? Great-great-grandfathers and so on aside?"
"While I'd quite like to believe myself unique in many ways," Colin said, smiling, "my powers aren't one of them. Not that England is festooned with dragons, you understand, but there are a few of us, even as late as my generation. Perhaps there are more than that, only the blood runs too thin for them to change shapes. Talents like mine, and yours, do generally pass on down the family line."
"You would say that, wouldn't you?"
Colin blinked at her, satisfyingly surprised by the change in direction.
"How do you mean?" "I do pay some attention when Pater talks. You're a lord's son, aren't you?"
Memories from finishing school were always at her fingertips somehow, even when more practical things slipped her mind.
"The Honourable Colin McAllister?"
"As a matter of formality, yes," he said, and his eyes glinted silver in the moonlight. He took a step toward Reggie. "In actuality, I'm honourable only when I can't find any way around it." Once again, Reggie was glad the railing was there to support her. This time, the weakness in her knees was more pleasant, but no less dangerous.
"I can believe that easily enough," she said,
and didn't even try very hard to sound disapproving.
"Even without my power."
"In all justice," Colin said, "you have to admit I've not done anything particularly scandalous tonight. I was simply admiring the view, and I'll presume so far as to think your father wouldn't have given me this room if he'd minded the use of the balcony."
"But he didn't," said Reggie,
finding a point of challenge and grabbing for it.
"It's Edmund's room. You're here because the vicar broke his ankle, and I'm not quite sure how that means you get Edmund's room, come to think of it."
"He was going to switch with Mrs. Osborne, but she likes an eastern view," Colin said, and his brow crinkled slightly as he thought. "So she traded with Miss Brown, but Miss Brown is allergic to the lilacs on this side of the house, and I believe she—" "Oh, no more!" Reggie stopped him with an upraised hand.
or at least have the grace to work it out with a blackboard and a bit of chalk. I'm sure the right angle of a parallelogram comes into it somewhere."
An owl flew by as they laughed together, its call echoing across the garden below. It was the first moving thing Reggie had seen, other than her and Colin, since she'd landed on the balcony. They might have been the only two people in the world. They were, she thought, the only two people in a world, at least as far as White Hill's residents were concerned.
"How long have you been reading people?" Colin asked. "Since I was 13. Edmund had just come back from school. That's why he knows. He's the only other one who really does."
"But you go about in society and everything. It must be rather hard on you."
"Not as bad as all that. It only works by touching bare skin."
Reggie took a step forward, looked up into his eyes, and smiled.
"And that doesn't happen very often."
Fluid, laughing, Colin held up his hands. "A point to the lady," he said. "I shouldn't have grabbed at you. But surely your maid doesn't touch me as much as you might imagine," said Reggie. "I don't get anything through hairpins or corset strings. Besides, I can generally control myself if I know in advance that someone's going to touch me." In moonlit silence, her words sounded like the most blatant of innuendo. From Colin's slow smile, Reggie knew that he hadn't missed the implications either. She looked between the smile and his heavy-lidded eyes, and felt her heart start beating faster. Reggie couldn't think of anything to say that would cut the tension between them. She couldn't think of much to say in general. Any minute Colin was going to say something, and it would be urbane and witty and put her even more off her footing than she was now, or he'd be one of those horrid, skilful men who could put her at her ease, and they'd both know that he was doing so. So Reggie stepped forward and kissed him. Scandalous as many found her life, Reggie knew that certain things were appropriate and others were not. Rules governed the universe, as strong as the laws of gravity or maters fussing about seating arrangements. One of those rules was that when throwing oneself into the arms of a strange man whose balcony one has invaded in the middle of the night, one does not kiss him with maidenly or timorous forbearance. She'd never sat down and thought about that particular rule, but it seemed obvious now. It seemed imperative, in fact, that she grasp Colin by the shoulders so that she could feel the muscles beneath the dark velvet of his dressing gown and the way that they flexed as he wrapped his arms around her. A sense of the appropriate also dictated that she open her mouth beneath his, caressing his lips with her tongue until they parted, and that she not simply melt bonelessly into his embrace, but mould her body against his. One had to enter into things with the proper spirit. Also, dear God, the man could kiss. After the first few seconds, Reggie stopped thinking about technique and tactics and appropriateness. There was too much sensation to enjoy. Colin's tongue stroking against hers, for instance, teasing and suggestive, or the way his hands grazed over her back. She'd never thought of her spine as a particularly sensual place, for heaven's sake. But he trailed his fingers up from her waist to the back of her neck, and Reggie felt the touch throughout her whole body. She did manage not to moan. The man was far too smug already. At least she was also having an effect on him. That was very definite. She felt his rod rubbing against her thigh, and felt as well his sudden intake of breath when she writhed in response. Either he was very large, she thought hazily, or dressing gowns and breeches provided considerably more information on that score than more proper clothing. She wasn't complaining. She wasn't complaining about the clothing at all. The shirt, small and thin as it was, let her feel Colin's hands on her back much more, and also let her press her aching breasts against his chest. Furthermore, when Colin slid one hand down to cup her backside, she thought she felt every nerve where he touched spring to life. It was almost as good as being naked. Before very long she would be,
naked, in her parents' house, with a man she'd met not 20 minutes before, while two floors...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?